Hello everyone and welcome back. Today is Friday, May 14th, 2010. My name is Angela Walton-Raji and this is the African Roots Podcast. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. How's everyone doing today? Hope you're having a good week. I know it's kind of turbulent weather out there in the middle part of the country. I hope you all are managing to stay safe. Our warm weather is kind of has gone on a hiatus. We are now having a little bit of cool weather, and I guess it's a sign of sort of the unstable springtime weather that one can expect this time of year. But some of those storms look pretty bad out in Oklahoma and Arkansas and Tennessee and Missouri. I hope you all are staying safe. Well, how's everybody doing? A lot of events are coming up, and I have a few announcements for you. Tomorrow, May 15th, at the National Museum of the American Indian, that is the Smithsonian National Museum of the American Indian, there will be a workshop on African Native American genealogy. This is the last one this spring, which is part of a series of lectures that have been presented in collaboration with the exhibition Indivisible, African Native American Families in the Americas. I will be speaking at that event, and that will begin promptly at 1 o'clock p.m. and will go from 1 to 3 p.m. in the Resource Center on the fourth floor of the museum. The best thing about it is that it is free of charge, and there is no pre-registration that is required. So if you're in the greater Washington area, I hope I'll have a chance to see you and look forward to seeing you on Saturday. Coming up in Washington, D.C. on the 18th of May, at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library, there's a genealogy database workshop. And this is interesting because many of you have heard about the database Heritage Quest. Well, this particular program is going to provide an introduction to Heritage Quest, and particularly it's going to look at the genealogical database and the historic Washington Post and the Baltimore Afro-American databases that one can access through Heritage Quest. Now, this is going to take place, as I said, at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library, which is on 901 G Street Northwest in Washington. And this is going to be in the evening, so those of you who are working don't have to worry about that. It is an evening presentation at 7 o'clock p.m. And I have a phone number for you and a link to the Martin Luther King Library as well, so you can get a little bit more information. This is free to the public, so again, it will be a great opportunity to really find out what Heritage Quest is about. Next weekend, I mentioned this last week, but I think I should mention it again. In Little Rock, Arkansas, researchers are going to have a two-day treat. This is going to take place at the Mosaic Templars Cultural Center, and this is going to be a two-day event on African-American genealogy. On Friday, participants can listen to Tony Burrows, and many of you know he's a nationally known speaker. And on Saturday, Lisa Arnold from Ancestry.com is going to speak about the large number of resources there at Ancestry. Now, this is a great chance to learn how to use the African-American filter on Ancestry. I am often amazed at how many people are not aware of the filter. I gave a presentation last week in New York, and I asked a few people if they were using it, and they were kind of looking at me, kind of puzzled. And I realize many people use Ancestry all the time and don't realize there's some special tools that are right there on that website for you that can help you find your ancestors. So go with your questions. Ask her about a wild card search as well. There's some wonderful features in Ancestry, but if you don't know, you don't know. So again, this two-day event, Friday, Tony Burrows, Saturday, Lisa Arnold from Ancestry. This is a great great chance to learn so much more. And again, just like the other two events I've already mentioned, it's free of charge. Now, they are asking individuals to pre-register. I think they want to have an idea of how many people are planning to attend. So I have some contact information for you on the website as well. But what a great opportunity. On the 26th of May, coming up at the Library of Congress, there's going to be an orientation class. And basically, it's a class that's just going to give you an idea of the many resources for genealogical research that already exist at the Library of Congress. I am surprised sometimes to find out how many people live in a community and don't always really, I guess maybe because it's there, it's just sort of assumed that, well, I'll get around to seeing it or getting around to getting over there. But many people don't necessarily know what the resources are in their local area. Well, many people I know who've been doing genealogical research for many years and many people who live in the greater Washington metropolitan area often do not use the Library of Congress. We use the National Archives. Many will use the resources at the DAR Library, or they may use the community library, the public library. But the Library of Congress has wonderful resources. Now, this is going to take place. It is a daytime event. It's Wednesday, the 26th of May at 10 a.m. Now, you will need a picture ID to be able to get into the building and to get a reader registration card that will be required for you to attend this. And you can get that in the Madison building. And I'm going to put this information for you there. And it's just a great opportunity. Many people don't have an idea of the wealth of data that's waiting for you right at the Library of Congress. It's recommended, the event begins at 10, that you get there no later than 9:30 if you do not already have a reader registration card. Then you need to get there no later than 9:30. So you'll have enough time to obtain the card and then to walk across the street to the Jefferson Building where the orientation is going to take place. So anyway, I have contact information for you there as well. Well, it's hard to believe June is almost here. And of course, the regular events are taking place in terms of the genealogy chapter meetings, but there are a couple of treats that are coming up as well. In the Baltimore area, the June 5th meeting is going to be sponsoring the annual picnic at the Benjamin Banneker Historical Park. That is in Ocala, which is a community in Baltimore County. And this is an annual event, and it is at the historical park named after Benjamin Banneker, and it's on the historic land that Banneker also lived on. And many of you know that Benjamin Banneker was one of a team of individuals who helped to, who was African American, he was a free man of color, and who helped to lay the plans for the city of Washington, D.C., among the many things that he did. He had an almanac, he was an astronomer, mathematician, he did so many other things as well. And so it's an historic place, and it's a great place to have sort of an end of the year, well, end of the season, so to speak, picnic, and it's an annual event now. Many of us, myself included, are looking forward to Samford. This is the Institute of Genealogy and Historical. I'm getting all the acronyms wrong now. It's IGHR, which is the Samford University Institute of Genealogy and Historical Research. And I hope I got the acronym correctly since I'm going there. But this is a wonderful, wonderful event. It takes place every summer, and it is something that it is an entire week experience. And I know every other year there is a track that is the African American track, and I was lucky, I was able to get in on that. And trust me, this is one of the tracks, so this entire event, and there are many tracks, this is one of the events that sells out within 10 days of opening up the registration. I had heard that the registration had opened up on the 19th of January, and I think by that evening when I was able to get online and register, I was, gosh, maybe number 30 or something like that. It was filling up very, very quickly. So it is something that I am looking forward to. But this is an event that takes place every year in Birmingham, Alabama, and it's an educational forum with just a number of things, literally from 9 to 5, 5 days of intense genealogy workshops, homework as well, which I don't know if I'm looking forward to homework, but I am looking forward to learning. And it's an exciting event, and I encourage others to participate. And I will be blogging from the event and tweeting and taking all kinds of notes that I can also share with you. So I am looking forward to that. And mark your calendars, not necessarily for this particular event that I'm going to mention that I already have, but for events in your community. The 19th of June, there are going to be a number of workshops, a number of celebrations that are going on around the country in celebration of emancipation of Juneteenth, as it is known. Now, this particular event historically is rooted into a celebration that began when individuals who were still enslaved in Texas after the Civil War was over, the 13th Amendment had been passed, people were already freed in many parts of the country, but people were still enslaved pretty much two and a half months after the war had ended. And General Granger sailed into Galveston Harbor on the 19th of June, and he proclaimed to the enslaved population that they were no longer enslaved. And of course, word spread like electricity through the community that slavery had ended. They were no longer in bondage. Well, this is an event for many years, for decades, since 1865, since that time, has been celebrated in many parts of the South and Southwest. In Texas, it's the state holiday. In parts of Oklahoma and Arkansas, we have always a big festival. And I know in Fort Smith, Arkansas, there is a festival on the river. It's all kinds of things that are going on, jazz and blues and lectures, workshops, and a number of things. In Maryland, there's an event that's taking place, and the Prince George's County OGS chapter, the African American Historical Genealogical Society chapter, is sponsoring a Juneteenth program. And this is going to be an exciting event. The entire day is going to go from like 8:30 to 4, and it's going to take place at the Watkins Nature Center. And this is in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. And the keynote speaker is going to be Carol Gibbs, who is an author and historian. And there are at least 3 different tracks, 9 different workshops throughout the day on history and genealogy. So it promises to be a good event. But if you're not in Maryland, no matter where you are, take a look and see what's going on. Many African American communities are now realizing, you know, we don't have a national event to celebrate the end of or the abolishment of the institution of slavery. And since Juneteenth has already been embraced by many people in many states already, it is spreading throughout the country as becoming an opportunity to celebrate freedom. And one thing I like about June, I like actually the summer months, because from June until August, it is a season of freedom. And well, Juneteenth is sort of a kickoff time for it. But of course, we know in the middle of July, we have the nation's Independence Day, which we all look forward to the barbecues and events there. Where I come from in western Arkansas, eastern Oklahoma, also parts of southern Oklahoma, for many decades, the first part of August was celebrated for emancipation. And I'm not really certain what was the origin of that. There are different theories about certain treaties being signed in August that freed the slaves in Indian Territory from bondage. Well, the treaties were signed on different dates, but for many decades, especially in the northern part, in the early part of the 20th century, emancipation celebrations were all over Oklahoma, all over Indian Territory. And these particularly were descendants of those who had been slaves from Indian Territory. As I mentioned, these were people who had been enslaved in the Choctaw Nation, in the Chickasaw Nation, in the Creek Nation, in the Cherokee Nation, and in what nation did I leave out? The Seminole Nation. And for many, many decades, up until the 1950s, this was very commonplace. Now, what is very commonplace, which happens almost everywhere, are the homecomings. And many individuals and many churches have their annual homecoming celebrations also in August. And this sort of coincides with the emancipation celebrations that have always taken place in Oklahoma for many, many years. So I guess it's why I look forward to summer. It's a season in which we do celebrate ourselves. We celebrate our communities and our histories. And we really embrace the spirit of freedom, whether it is local, whether it's community, or whether it's the nation's freedom. So it's just a good time for families to get together and for old friends to get together again as well. So anyway, I hope that you'll be able to enjoy yourself at some of those events coming up. I wanted to mention something that was shared with me this week. And actually, I did have a chance to go and take a look at it, and I was very, very impressed. And this was a website, apparently, that's devoted to two places where individuals had been enslaved in the Charlottesville, Virginia area. And there are two areas of focus, Hydraulic Plantation and Bleak House Plantation. Well, apparently several individuals have started to collaborate and put their energies together to create the African American Families database that's coming out of Central Virginia. Absolutely amazing. It's a partnership, or actually a collaboration, between individuals who are historians, anthropologists, database designers, as well as individuals who come from the community, and many are genealogists as well. And they have developed an online database connecting African American families to their antebellum roots. And they're also looking at the patterns of community formation that took place after the Civil War, after individuals were freed. Now, I mentioned the two plantations, and Hydraulic Plantation, which is kind of an odd name, I thought. And apparently, Hydraulic it was an estate, it was a plantation, but it was also a mill works. And this was outside of Charlottesville, just a few miles north of Charlottesville, where Ivy Creek and the Ravana River, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, where they come together. I guess it's the South Fork of the Ravana River. And for about 30 or so years, Nathaniel Burnley was the person who had owned a Hydraulic estate or Hydraulic plantation. Why it has that name, though? Doesn't that sound mechanical or something? But it's kind of interesting. Well, he was a saddler. He was also a tavern keeper for many, many years before he had purchased the estate or the mills, hydraulic mills. Well, apparently, what I guess that the researchers have done, and what they've come to do, is really to get information about the individuals who were once enslaved on that estate. And what I like about the site, and the site is really impressive, there's a digitized map of not just the information in terms of where individuals lived, but the property values for the area that encompassed hydraulic and the areas around it, and those who even own land, including black land ownership. And it was just amazing. And there was also this site for researching, or actually, I guess, searching for enslaved ancestors. And they actually took some screenshots and put them there on the site from the database and from estate records as well, of course, from census records. They used a particular family, the Beck family, as sort of a case. And they followed that family and were able to match the mother in the household to a woman in the estate owned by Nathaniel Brunley, and who was the slaveholder. Fascinating things that they've done on that website. And the other site I mentioned was a site or an estate known as Bleak House. And this was a plantation that had over 40 slaves. They had 9 slave dwellings. And it's very interesting in terms of what they were able to discover about that. And apparently, I guess there was a whole estate inventory, but some things didn't happen, I guess, because the Civil War had begun, it appears. And by the time the estate was actually being settled, it was the middle of the war, it was 1863, and apparently no slaves were for sale at that point. And so hopefully word had reached and people were saying, nope, sorry, I'm out of here, I'm gone. I doubt if they were released gleefully by the enslaver, but it's very, very interesting to see. And I'm hoping that they are going to be able to find that perhaps some of those who had been enslaved had joined the Union Army. It's going to be interesting to see. They have mentioned that there is a possibility that there were some. And it's going to be fascinating to just watch how that website's going to develop. They have a fabulous beginning, and I really encourage you to visit the site. And I guess the reason why I'm encouraging you to go and look at the site, and you may say, ah, I don't have Virginia ancestors, why should I take a look? Well, you're researching someplace. And I'm hoping that beyond just getting the names of your family, and especially if you're at a point where you've collected names of people and you're almost running out of names, but you love doing the research, well, I'm hoping that you're going to start to ask yourself another question. And that question being, how much do you know about your own community? Now, this project out of Charlottesville, Virginia, is such a wonderful lesson on the value of researching the local history to record the data that's still there, but you're also providing information for others in the community who may at some point start to document that area or start to document ancestors from that area. Now, I have become aware of one of the projects coming out of South Carolina and the Drayton Hall and Magnolia Plantations, and I've been fascinated to listen to and to learn about how they are reconstructing some of the communities and are able to just learn more about the individuals and the lives that were lived that came around that community around Hilton Head in particular. I have had the honor of doing a few lookups for the individuals involved in that project, and you can read about that on the Lowcountry Africana site. And I've looked up a few of the records of some of the men who served in the Civil War and have shared the pension files with those who are involved with the project. Likewise, I've been able to collaborate with a close colleague in Arkansas who has documented the entire African-American community of Crawford County and Sebastian County, Arkansas. And by acquiring Civil War records, both pension and service records, and studying marriage records, and of course census, obituaries, as well as newspaper databases. Well, my colleague has acquired an immense database on the community, and such a rich history has come forth. And I guess I've learned to appreciate the fact from one small file, one small Civil War pension file, which is where we started out with a pension file of one of my ancestors, that so much came out of that file. Suddenly, information from witnesses who provided depositions that led to other soldiers, that led to other civilians by name, and they were able to talk about their lives when they were enslaved. And of course, that led to other databases, looking up marriages and putting together family relationships as well. Well, by following up on these records, relationships have been learned, but a rich cultural history of the Black community has been just so fascinating, because you really learn so much about how a community was supportive to its own members. Some of the old newspapers have provided wonderful glimpses into an era that's long past, and to really learn how the network of friendships and the families, just how they interconnected. It's just been discovered by myself immersing myself into the community history, but collaborating with a close colleague who's really done tremendous work. And I have just become in awe of what has unfolded from that. For lack of a word, I asked a colleague for a term. In fact, this is, colleague in South Carolina, maybe, who was able to give me this term. And I said, well, what is this when you're able to research and reconstruct a community? Oh, and she immediately said, oh, this is very much community area studies. I like that term. I didn't realize there was a term for it, but it did seem to fit. And I guess my question is, can we encourage others to engage in community area studies? Are Black families, particularly those who endured through a Jim Crow era, they lived in a community. They had no choice in terms of mobility in many times and many places. So there was a community that protected itself, that insulated itself, and that nourished itself. And perhaps we learn more about our families if we can study those communities. We all know that genealogy is not practiced in a vacuum, and so many times lives were never written about, but we can still document and explore them and find some of those stories. We can learn about how our parents and our grandparents coped in the isolation and the insulation that resulted from Jim Crow segregation. And this is just a road that I encourage others out there to consider traveling down and to see where it takes you. The history is a rich one, and the joys of unlocking the stories are rewarding in and of themselves. Well, I think I've run out of time. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. Have a great week. And you know, I do appreciate you. And in the meantime, keep doing what you do. Keep researching. Keep documenting. And please keep sharing what you find. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.